एक मिनट रुक जाओ, रेडी होने दो। चलो ये कर लेते हैं, दिस कुड बी अ ग्रेट इंट्रो।
हाय, आई एम अक्षय।
हाय, दिस इज सौरभ एंड यू आर लिसनिंग टू द फाउंडर थीसिस पॉडकास्ट। वी मीट सम ऑफ द मोस्ट सेलिब्रेटेड स्टार्टअप फाउंडर्स इन द कंट्री
एंड वी वांट टू लर्न हाउ टू बिल्ड अ यूनिकॉर्न।
हाय, दिस इज कुणाल वर्मा। आई एम वन ऑफ द फाउंडर्स एट फ्रियो नियोबैंक।
Serial entrepreneurs make for some of our most interesting guests. And if that entrepreneur is building something that would one day replace giant legacy corporations, then it's an even bigger treat. Kunal Verma, founder of Freyo and MoneyTap, checks off both these boxes. He started his first entrepreneurial venture within his B-school, opting to be an entrepreneur instead of seeking placements. He subsequently built up an edtech business that got acquired before starting MoneyTap, a credit line app that is disrupting the personal loan and credit card industry. Today, MoneyTap is the leading credit line app in India, and Kunal's expanding it to build a full-stack neo bank with the branding of Freyo. Listen to Kunal telling Akshay Dutt about building products that consumers love and disrupting how people do banking in India.
Okay, so Kunal, what's home for you? Like, you know, where did you grow up and in what kind of family?
So I was born and brought up in a small town called Jamshedpur. My dad spent his career at the Tata's group, and hence Jamshedpur being the hub for the Tata's group back then. All born and brought up over there. So my early years in life been fairly influenced and conditioned by the culture in that part of the country. And I think then somewhere in my teens, kind of moved out from there and moved to a larger town, a larger city. And that was my first exposure ever. So that was Delhi for me. Obviously, it was a huge difference from coming from a smaller town to a metropolitan city.
Hmm. And which school in Delhi did you join? Like, which class were you in?
Yeah, so I joined the 11th standard in Delhi public school in Arkepuram.
Wow, that's like such a major change.
It was.
I mean, DPS Arkepuram is like, you know, like all, like, you know, fairly well-to-do families, kids come there, and like highly urban kind of a setup.
That's true. That is true. I think it was in some ways, it was also like for me, a cultural melting pot to actually experience higher education, at least from a school standpoint, in Arkepuram. So the friends that I made at that stage of my life are still very close friends. And we all had something common. You know, we all were in that school and we were looking at, you know, really working hard and making something good out of ourselves. And at least all of us were all, you know, looking at engineering, and that was the dream that we had, like as cliched as it may sound, but to become a successful, you get an engineering degree from one of the top niche engineering schools in the country was the dream back then.
Right. Yeah, I can see you passed out in 97, which is also the year I passed out from TPS Arkepuram. We were in school at the same time, I guess.
Wow. That is yeah, that is
small world.
Small world. But having said that, I mean, the funny thing is that the DPS is such a big world, right? It's like almost 900 students in one class. It's almost impossible to know other people.
Absolutely. I was in commerce, you must have been in science, I guess.
Yeah,
there would have been very little overlap. Possibility of interaction.
Yeah, that's true. I was in section G as a computer science. So yeah, I think probably a bunch of geeks and kind of all living in our own world back then. So yeah. So yeah, that's how, so Delhi was home for some time. And then I went to Roorkee for my undergrad. And you know, eventually passed out with a BTech with honors in computer science. So in some ways, I think you know, did my family proud by getting a certificate from IIT. But yeah, I think it was interesting. 4 years of undergrad living in the the Ganges belt of the country, some amazing life experiences, some long life bonds forged at that time. And then that paved the path for my adult life, really, after that.
Like, when you like passed out of IIT, did you like have like an ambition in mind that this is what you want to do, or like, you know, what was it like?
Yeah, so you know, I've always been like a dreamer since I was a kid, and that's probably part of how I am as a person. I would love to just sit and dream about, you know, what I could become, and it started by, you know, thinking about when I was in probably like middle school, I would be thinking about becoming a football player because I've always loved sports. And then I dreamt of actually going into an armed forces because I was always an outdoorsy kid, martial arts, sports, everything. Obviously, that was shot down by my diligent Indian mother, who decided that no, you know, I shall not go. And I mean, those are the days when I used to listen to my family. So obviously, and as an obedient child, I had no other option but to comply. But yeah, I think there were at every stage of my life, I had some dream. And I think it's important. I personally feel that it's important to have a dream, and your dreams may change. But actually going through life, no matter how small you are, and without having a dream at any moment, it's pretty boring. It's like living life in monochrome. So I think, so for me, when I graduated, to answer your question, my dream was to eventually one day build a large company and leave a huge footprint of some legacy where I built a huge empire, where something is really changed, or, you know, my company is changing people's lives in a big way. So I had this large blue sky definition in my head. It was very vague, but that is how it was.
So, like, where did you join from campus? Did you get placed through campus?
Yeah, so it was very interesting because the year I graduated was 2001 in engineering, and just in 2000, you know, the entire Y2K had happened, the whole episode, and then the dot-com bubble had burst globally, the dot-com crash. And that was an interesting time because I had got a job offer on campus on day one from Nortel Networks. And, you know, that's, you know, you're in your fourth semester of engineering. And then just before graduating and passing out of IIT, we got a letter from Nortel Networks saying we are shutting down our India operations. So I think just like, you know, after celebrating your last final semester as an engineer, and I'm pretty much coasting through life for those 6 months, you suddenly, there was a wake-up call that, hey, I don't have a job, because the offer letter was rescinded. It happened across the board for a whole bunch of people. Obviously, companies were shutting down their operations left, right, and center. So I was one of the folks at the receiving end as well. So it was a wake-up call. I suddenly realized that, you know, there is nothing is going to be served on a platter. So I need to immediately pull up my socks and get into hard work. So then eventually I ended up joining a startup right out of campus itself. I got placed in another New Jersey-based startup, but they had their R&D operations in Delhi itself. And it was a pretty nerdy job back then, coding, device drivers, all the kind of stuff. And I did that. I was pretty excited. A computer science geek myself. So I was pretty excited. I joined that company. And that was just 6 months, because within 6 months, I figured out that I'm getting rather bored at that job. And, you know, it was not really exciting me. I was not really solving problems which would really push my thinking. So I switched gears, and I had a chance for some reasons. It's a serendipitous, and I ended up joining Texas Instruments.
Okay. And in India,
out of their R&D unit in Bangalore, and that's where I spent the next 7 years working with Texas Instruments. A lot of exposure, you know, traveling to their units in US, France, Japan, working with people globally. And some amazing life experiences as well along the way. But I think 7 years at Texas Instruments, and that is the only corporate job that I've ever had in my life. So that's the only one time where I've actually prepared for an interview myself or given an interview. So pretty good fond memories, but that was it in terms of where I started.
What made you stay with them so long? Like, you know, I'm trying to understand what was it about, whether it was the role or the culture or.
Yeah, I think it was a combination of a few things. One is that I think back then, I personally was not exposed to concepts of work-life balance. What is work stress? what is personal life? I think these concepts were pretty foreign to me at that time. The culture was one of very high commitment ethic, hard working, high sense of ownership. My initial boss. One of my initial bosses at Texas Instruments was a phenomenal gentleman, and I learned so much. I mean, there was a time when I used to think that, you know, he's quite the taskmaster, but I loved working in that environment. So the combination of those things, and honestly, it was a huge discovery process for me. I mean, surprisingly, in my engineering, I was a computer science major. And I did not pay much attention to my hardware and electronics courses in IIT. That is to put it mildly, the unsugar coated version is that I sucked at those courses, and the professors they made it a point to call it out loud in the class. So all my friends and I were very clear that, you know, if there's one thing that I should not be doing in life is going into electronics and hardware. And that is exactly what I ended up doing, which is going into Texas Instruments, which is all about hardware design. But I realized that as much as I was uninterested in the theory of it, I loved the actual work. And I did pretty well, I think, the amount of learning, the contribution that we made, and particularly the people. I think that's what made me stick around. So the challenge of doing things which had not been done before, building out products which were the first of its kind back then, you know, our department teams used to file patents a lot. So that experience, along with the managers and the seniors that I worked with, I think that's what made me stick around. And like I said, you know, I mean, I really was not one of those people who had the spirit of giving up easily. So there were tough days when I used to have a small pillow and a toothbrush at my cubicle, and there were days where we used to just like not go home. I used to go home after 48 hours. But it was phenomenal, right? And something like that doesn't happen unless you are passionate about something. Right, because then there are so many options available, so you can just get up and quit one day and say, "Hey, this is not for me." But I think the culture is what, and the culture and the people is what really allowed me to stick around. And I don't know. Time just flew, and you know, I just look back and they say, "Hey, it's been like almost 7 years, but it was phenomenal." I mean, you know, the experience of working across global teams and projects. So.
So then, why, like, you know, why move out? Like, what made the What was the trigger to like do an MBA? And
yeah, you know, it was one of those things where, like I said, right, I've always, a part of me has always been a lot about dreaming about like what should I be doing in the future? What would my path look like? Like, why am I doing this? You know, I always keep questioning, you know, I keep having these existential thoughts about myself and my life every once in a while. I'm not sure it's a great thing to do, but that is who I am. So I always knew that, look, I had this vision of starting something of my own and doing something. And I mean, I do not come from a family where everybody is in entrepreneurship, right? So my father's side of the family, there were no entrepreneurs, no family businesses. And my mother's side of the family, almost everybody is in business. So but the one thing which is common across both sides of the family is that there are a lot of lawyers in the family. So I honestly thought that, you know, I would eventually grow up to become a lawyer, if not anything else, and I just go into the family profession. So, but I think what happened is that along the way, I realized that, look, I'm doing well in technology, but there are a couple of things which were coming out to me as a pattern, One was that I was somehow missing the big picture somewhere in terms of what is the impact that I am making through my, you know, daily slogging of 18 hours a day, 7 days a week. So I'm sitting there, I'm working at like some 3 a.m. on a Sunday morning in office, coding my way away on hardware design. And I'm thinking about like, hey, you know, I'm doing this work and I know that it's going to make an impact maybe second order, third order down the line, but I'm not sure if it's going to move the needle for actual one human being's life. So I had started thinking about a lot about like, you know, I need to kind of find my path. I need to figure out how can I start something of my own and realize my dream. And the sooner I do that, the better it is, because, you know, let's just make mistakes while you're young, you know, and so that, you know, you still have time to correct those mistakes and you have the energy to kind of find your new path. So I think a lot of this introspection and looking at what I was doing and the impact that it was making really pushed me to the extent that I realized that, look, I just cannot, I cannot continue to do this. And obviously money and finances were not the motivator at all, because I think financially I was doing pretty well at TI. So if I had continued on a corporate growth path, I would be very comfortable in that sense in life, more than what I would have imagined. But I knew that now is the time. So that whole push of not seeing the impact that my work was creating on a daily basis, and knowing that, look, I had this vision, and it looks like after 7 to 8 years of working, I still have that vision. So that probably that itch has not been scratched, or, you know, that dream has not been fulfilled. So I said, you know, let's just jump and make the jump and do it. So, but I needed a conduit, right? Like, you know, being in R&D, being a very geeky person and having a very narrow worldview in technology does not prepare you for life entirely. And unfortunately, we all grew up, I mean, I grew up in a culture where I was not prepared for the challenges of life. You know, how do you think about money? How do you think about financial planning? How do you think about future? How do you think about risk taking? So the conduit for me was to take a year or maybe 2 years off, maybe find a middle ground. And that seemed like business school, because that would allow me to get some exposure from people, you know, who are completely from different walks of life. That's what made me take the jump against just amazing amount of opposition that I got from a lot of people. That is the start to all the opposition I started facing for the next couple of years in life.
If you're interested in what you heard, you can visit friosave.com and sign up to experience India's first credit building savings account.
So what made you want to create an impact? Was it inspired by the Tata philosophy, like, you know, considering your dad worked there?
So, I mean, at some level, you know, how you look at things around you on a daily basis do impact you. And I was obviously in awe of, growing up, a lot in awe of J.R.D. Tata. He's like a legendary person, some of the other iconic figures at the Tata's group. But I think it was that plus a combination of reading a lot about what other people had done for themselves. You know, those are the times when we were looking
Who were the people who inspired you?
So I think the one thing obviously was, you know, growing up in an environment and looking at Tata's. The second thing was, I was obviously, you know, I started to hear a lot about how some of the big, large scale entrepreneurs globally were making a difference, right? So these are the days when I just started hearing about, what Hewlett Packard was doing globally in terms of building the business out. I just started hearing about, what Nike was doing, Phil Knight was doing. I just started hearing a lot about what the Birla Group in India was doing, and of course, you know, one wouldn't miss with the whole news about, you know, how Dhirubhai Ambani was shaping the future of the Ambani Group, or what he had done. So I think some of these figures made a lot of, take a step back and think that, you know, if that's the scale of what people can do with the 24 hours of their time And if I have a vision, then why not? Like, you know, I think I at least have the determination, but let me figure it out. So I think those are the days. And that along with, you know, my own personal thing that, look, I have to create an impact. I have to create something big. But I wouldn't say there was any one major person which was completely life transforming as far as an impact is concerned, which forced me to jump in that direction. But it was more about, you know, getting more exposure, seeing more things around me, and probably just, you know, being a person who is more, I would say, internally driven in terms of who I want to be and what I want to do. And I think a combination of these is what just made me take that plunge.
Okay. So did you get more clarity in that 1 year at ISB in terms of what you want to do?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I absolutely got clarity because I started my journey as an entrepreneur while I was a student in business school. I think that for me was I think another seminal year in my life, and particularly because of a couple of reasons. One is that again, I was in ISB doing my MBA from the School of Business in Hyderabad in the year 2008. And that is the year the financial crisis happened, the entire Lehman Brothers, the entire market collapse happened. And we were all in business school, and I had started then interacting with a lot of people who came from different walks of life, chartered accountants, engineers, doctors, people from other commercial domains. And today, I think some of my closest friends are the people that I spend time with in business school. But that definitely opened up my eyes. It just gave me so many different dimensions and mental models to look at things and on how to really frame a problem. How do I evaluate what choices lie ahead of me? I think all of this was heavily influenced by mostly my friends, I would say. So the biggest influence for me at business school was my friends,
the peer group,
and I'm so thankful. I'm so thankful for the peer group that I had access to, and that actually gave me some of my closest friends, who I can today, you know, who are like family to me. So I think that was my biggest.
Yeah, influence. That's the bad thing about online learning. You lose out on the peer group.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think obviously the joke is that my friends and family tell me that, you know, I should never ever go back to any more education, because the 2 years during which I graduated, there was an the markets crashed both the years, 2001 and 2008. So I've been forbidden to go back for any further higher education. Not that I'm yearning to, but yeah. But yeah, that happened. And honestly, the time at B school helped me forge some ideas around how should I look at my life in the next few years. Should I take the plunge of becoming an entrepreneur and whatnot? So I think that year and the influence of peer group and friends is what really changed my life in a big way.
What was the business you started, like, while on campus? And, you know, tell me about that, like that launch journey from idea coming to your mind to actually taking it off.
Sure. I mean, now that I look back, and if I narrate it to you, it's so funny in my head, because it was all driven by passion and the unconditional support of my friends. Not so much driven by how I operate today, having gone through the journey. But I think back then, so I started my first venture, which was mostly focused on providing marketing and branding services to other institutions. Marketing was my major in the MBA. I did not pay any attention to courses and streams like finance. And there's another inside joke, and I'll probably tell you later. But yeah, I think a lot of my time spent in marketing, and I started my.
You can tell me now. So this is not a
suspense.
I mean,
yeah, I think when I look back, I compare with what I did in my education and in my life, and it's actually 180 degrees opposite, right? So in my undergraduate, I absolutely detested electronics and hardware, and I loved computer science. And I spent my job, my career at TI completely doing electronics and hardware, which was exact opposite of what I liked. And in my MBA, I absolutely slept through most of my finance classes. Today I'm running Freeo, which is in the world of finance and fintech, and I'm loving it. And I realized that, you know, I'm just thinking like, why did I not do this earlier? I love this business. So I think that's the joke. I mean, everybody is like, you know, we exactly know that if you like something in your studies and academics, you're definitely not going to do that for the rest of your life. I think somehow it's just worked out like that for me. Yeah, so that was my first venture in terms of providing marketing and branding services to corporates. So, for example, ISB used to have its annual alumni meet. So I decided to, become the entire branding partner for all their branding and merchandise activities.
That was like your first client? Like ISB was your first client?
Yes, they were. I had to actually bid for the project because it was not easy. Just because I was a student, they were not willing to just give it away. So I had to kind of outbid some other people and kind of get my foot through the door. But obviously they were very encouraging, ISB as a school. That was my first client. And then from there on, I think I grew my client base to other institutions and corporates and companies. There'll be like, you know, companies like Cisco, Johnson & Johnson.
And what was the service offering? Like, was it like digital marketing or?
No, so the service offering was that, you know, these institutions, they were looking at creating, you know, a whole full-fledged branding program for future joinees or employees, and creating a complete branding team in terms of how should they make sure that their brand and their culture translates into products or merchandise that their employees, that their partners, that their clients would consume. For example, things like a branding message around some event, things like products, like merchandising, like it could be branded souvenirs, it could be t-shirts, it could be any major marketing collateral, or just the strategy around how should they, translate their culture and thinking into a branding strategy for their employees, for their partners on the ground, and then eventually make sure that it gets translated into some actual product, which is either worn by people or used by people on a day-to-day basis. If there was a scope for some new design of souvenirs and t-shirts and other products to be created, I would be advising them on how to go about it. And then I expanded my offering from not just providing the services, but I said, I will also actually get the product for you. And then I tied
right.
up. Tied
Makes
up,
sense.
Yeah. So I tied up with manufacturer. I said, why not just increase my value chain penetration over there? So I did that, and I tied up with manufacturers at the back end. These are wholesale manufacturers on different types of merchandise, and I would source the product, I would create the whole strategy, source the product, and provide the end finished product, and I would really make my margins on the value that I was providing. So that was my initial journey. So obviously in the first 2 to 3 months itself, I started generating cash flows. Because it was a services business and I had very, very minimal capital requirement from my side. So I started making money very quickly. I realized that, you know, the amount of money that I was making when I was working at Texas Instruments, I had already started making that kind of money in about 5 to 6 months of becoming an entrepreneur for myself. So immediately I thought that, look, you know, this is okay from a money standpoint, but as far as the problem that I'm solving on a day-to-day basis, I'm not sure if I'm going to love solving the same problem, 2 years down the line, 3 years down the line. So after having done this for about a couple of years and having made whatever money I could make, I then moved on to doing something else, which was, again, like a kind of a lateral transition. And, you know, all of these companies, when I used to, my clients, they used to keep asking me that, you know, while you've done this branding and merchandising and marketing strategy for things, but we also need to engage our employees. And then there are training programs, a whole bunch of activities. So do you know somebody who can help us engage our employees and offer training programs for a whole bunch of things? And that is what allowed me to transition and realize that that was probably a much larger problem, which was all around trainings and skill development and skill assessments. And that's what allowed me to, take all the cash that I'd made over there and morph myself into a skills assessment and skill development company. And that was my second major switch.
So this was something like Metal, like a online thing, or
it was like Metal in some ways. And incidentally, you mentioned Metal. Ketan, the founder of Metal, was my classmate at IIT. Different streams. Ketan was in metallurgical, I was in computer science, but obviously, friends from back then, IIT days. They were doing something which was more technologically savvy at that point in time, and my initial focus started on with a
more human-driven.
Human-driven initially, and then I think that evolved and pivoted into a larger platform and a product play eventually. But yeah, my first step there was a slightly more services oriented model. And I think it was also driven by my desire to always keep making money. So I kind of had made a promise to myself that as much as possible, I will always try to be an entrepreneur who does not lose money. And I think till date, I can say that, like, at least I've not lost money. But my starting point in services back then was driven by that focus that I should be making money. And then eventually it kind of evolved into a much larger technology driven platform play. I got a co-founder on board as I changed my whole idea and thought process. We worked together to create something big, and that's what led me to the next leg of my journey.
And what is that? So over here, just one, like, what were the kind of engagements you were getting? Like, say, a company wants to train the front level staff, or
yeah. So this is like, so mostly it was about training and skill development for most of the professional staff, which is like mid manager and managerial level staff. So this would be about different areas of professional development. Initially, it started out by a huge demand for areas of training and assessment around organizational behavior, organizational development. I would say negotiation, conflict management. Those are the areas that I used to get a lot of queries for. And that then kept growing, and I kept adding areas to it. And I expanded the repertoire of services that were being offered. I kind of built a network of other professional individuals who could actually deliver the same outcome under my brand and create like a revenue sharing model. Because I had to figure out how to scale this, because, I have only so many hours in the day. So even if I learned how to deliver it by myself, that wouldn't be the smartest thing to do as an entrepreneur. So then I built a network of people who could actually create high quality content and deliver. And I also started doing a lot of it myself because I really enjoyed it. And that evolved into my next product play, which we called SkillWiz.
We have now come to the end of part one of our conversation with Kunal Varma, co-founder of Freyo. In part two of this conversation, we find out how Freyo plans to make a strong mark of its own within the neo-banking category and what the future looks like for them.
If you like the Founder Thesis podcast, then do check out our other shows on subjects like marketing, technology, career advice, books, and drama. Visit thepodium.in, that is thepodium.in, for a complete list of all our shows.
This episode of Founder Thesis Podcast is brought to you by Long Haul Ventures. Long Haul Ventures is the long haul partner for founders and startups that are building for the long haul. More about them is at www.longhaulventures.com.